We all dream of seeing the world, but the realities of living somewhere outside your place of birth can be daunting, to say the least. Welcome to the Expat Money Show, helping you make the most out of your overseas career through conversations with successful expats on investing, entrepreneurship, self-improvement, and continual education, all while sharpening your financial acumen. Now please welcome your host, with over 20 years of overseas experience, Mikkel Thorup.
Before we get going today, I want to tell you about the new video I have just launched on how American expats can save more than $100,000 on taxes legally. It's one of a dozen hacks I have uncovered in my research, and I tell you all about it for free in this new video. If you have been listening to this podcast for any length of time, then you know that I have some pretty strong feelings about income tax and how my money is spent. It's why I've gotten so obsessed with helping people to legally reduce their tax bill. If you want to discover one of the best hacks out there for reducing your taxes so you have more money in your pocket to build your business, travel the world, or just smoke a nice big fat cigar like I would, then go to expattaxhacks.com. That's expattaxhacks.com to watch this free video and discover how you can reduce your tax bill by more than $100,000 this year. That's expattaxhacks.com. All right, let's do this. Enjoy today's episode. Welcome, welcome, welcome. My name is Mikkel Thorup. This is the Expat Money Show, and today's guest was born in Germany but has made his home in several countries, including New Zealand, Spain, and Austria. He considers himself a permanent tourist who lives freedom and has traveled to over 70 countries. Applying his 12-flag theory to business, he wanders the world consulting others who wish to pursue this type of lifestyle. Please welcome to the show, Christoph Hoymann. Christoph, how are you doing?
Very good, thank you. Love to talk with you the next hour.
Yeah, I'm very excited to have you here. So when I was looking through the website, I think that we have a lot of things in common. We do a lot of the same type of work, but I do it kind of from a North American perspective, but because you're German, you do it more from the European perspective. So you've talked a lot about the taxes and things like that. Can you spend a couple of minutes and kind of walk us through your backstory and how you got into this type of lifestyle and why you decided to be writing about it and consulting about it and helping others with it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. So basically, it's already now 140 countries, not 70 anymore. I doubled it. I'm traveling very much, both for pleasure and for business. So basically, what I'm doing is helping mostly Europeans to lower their taxes, to relocate, to get into better investments, alternative investments, and so on. But it all started basically for me by being a statist. So what I actually did was I studied statism, public administration in university, with the goal to become an EU bureaucrat. But luckily, as it comes in like the first semester, I was reading the right or the wrong books. In that case, Friedrich August von Hayek. And that converted me more or less to a libertarian. And due to a lot of like high school, university work and different initiatives in Germany, I got more and more libertarian. Then, of course, after a while, I would say to myself, I don't want to study public administration anymore. I don't want to become a bureaucrat, work for government. I just want to do my own thing, start a company. And that's basically how it started for me. I just tried to basically apply my knowledge to problems of entrepreneurs and not for the like solutions of the government.
Well, that's very interesting because I had the same type of thing. As soon as you start reading one type of libertarian piece of literature or an Austrian economics type of literature, it just, everything seems to fall into place. And then you look at your life and you look at what you thought and believed before, and you realize like all the flaws that are in the system, and the solution is never more government. Like we have these problems in the world and they actually stem from the government. So when you start reading this type of literature, you see an alternative to that. And that's going to be kind of the theme for today's episode is this alternative way of looking at things. We're going to talk about some investments and things. But that's really interesting that you were actually headed down that line in such a direct path and made such a 180-degree turn and changed your life.
Yeah, I never heard about it before, basically. And then basically after 20 years, it fell down. It was so clear for me. That's basically making sense. Finally, something is making sense. Even if basically everyone around you, like all my fellow students and friends, are still on that like very socialist communist kind of thinking, and you are the only one trying to do something differently. Yeah? And that helped me a lot as well, maybe to elaborate on that. I just learned a lot in like this university years to be very independent, to really just do what I want and be really not to care too much about what other people say about you.
Well, I had an Austrian economist on the show the other day who is Austrian, born and raised, and had never even heard of Austrian economics until after he had finished studying economics in school. Like they didn't even speak about it at all. And he went to business school. So that just shows you how much the government controls these types of information, that even in a business school, they don't teach it. But once people learn about it on their own, they just kind of fall down that rabbit hole and keep going and devouring content and ideas and concepts.
Yeah, definitely. So maybe to add a few more lines on that, in high school, I basically founded a libertarian club. We actually tried to teach Austrian economics to our fellow students, but the leftists in university basically tried to shut us down, tried to basically deregister us from the university because they didn't like these ideas. I mean, in Germany, it's quite crazy, much, much worse than in America even, with like leftist student groups on campus. And that was one matter. And the other matter for me, what I really want to say, I did some internships in politics. I worked in the German parliament and in the EU in Brussels for a couple of weeks. And that really showed me, you know, politics is not a way to achieve like freedom. You can only achieve freedom basically by entrepreneurship and technology. Yeah,
yeah, I agree with that 100%. So I have to also apologize. When we prepared your bio, my intro, I was told 70 countries. Now you've been to 140 countries. You've completely doubled it. So where are you today?
Yeah, I mean, that I'm currently in Vanuatu, which is a little island in the South Pacific. And so I'm currently basically hopping from one island nation to the other one before they sink in the ocean, climate change, you know. And that basically helped me because, I mean, these islands are not very big. It's very easy, like 2-3 days, you've seen everything, and then you hop to the next one. So I did like 8 countries in the last two weeks. Yeah.
Oh my goodness, that's quite a few. When I lived in Australia, we would go over to some of the South Pacific countries for a weekend. So we'd go to, you know, Fiji for a long weekend, 3-4 days, and then come back. We go scuba diving, come back. I think I went to Fiji 5 times. I was in Vanuatu, Tonga, a whole bunch of different places there. But yeah, stunning, stunning, stunning part of the world.
Yeah, for me, it's not only like pleasure. It's also sometimes business. For example, Vanuatu is interesting for me because they sell citizenships. And you can actually purchase it here with cryptocurrency. So that's just, for example, one flag on what is interesting.
Well, I did know that they were doing citizenship by investment. I did not know that they were doing it by cryptocurrency investment. Talk to me for a few minutes about what you've learned since you've been over there looking at this program.
Yeah, basically, one what the citizenship isn't that bad. The passport is actually quite okay, enabling you access to the Schengen countries and so on. And you can get it by investment. So you don't need to like donate money. You have to invest, I think, $220,000. And so that's the big thing. You can do it in Bitcoin. So if you have a lot of Bitcoin, I mean, you still have to fulfill all like the usual compliance things and so on. But if you only have Bitcoin and only like the bank, you can basically pay the provider with Bitcoin. They convert it and you get your citizenship. So that might be an option for the crypto billionaires in the show.
That's really interesting. We haven't had much talk about cryptocurrency. The last year has been such a slump. It's kind of gone out of the mainstream news. But I'm glad to see that there are governments in the world that are trying to take this on board and assimilate it into their systems.
Yeah, I mean, cryptocurrency is still developing and it's far from over. I mean, just what the market says doesn't mirror the development. It's actually good in my eyes that it has this big fell because it just kicks out like all the speculators and the people who just thought, I can connect some money with it. I went out last year already because my father, who couldn't even like play with the mobile phone, went into Bitcoin. So that was the sign for me to go out.
So did you sell out before the giant crash then?
Yeah, not too early, but early enough, so to speak. That's basically much capital for the investments. I might speak later on. Yeah.
Perfect. So before I pushed record today, we were kind of chit-chatting about alternative investments. And I think this is a really fantastic topic. And I would love to hear kind of your experience through alternative investments. And maybe it's good for us to even start out with a definition. When we say alternative assets, what does that mean to you?
Yeah, so for me, basically, alternative assets mean something, I mean, you can define very broadly. But for me, I don't really believe in stocks, especially not in the current situation. I think a crash or recession worldwide is highly likely. And for me, basically, a good investment is something where I have some kind of control of, which is basically entrepreneurial. So an alternative investment for me, a good alternative investment for me is something where you basically have some part, where you do business, where you can like put in your own ideas, where you can just steer it as a good entrepreneur in order to make profit, and that makes it much more calculated. It's high risk. All these investments basically are high risk, but this risk is very calculated in my eyes.
Okay, so how would you calculate the risk? What does that mean to you when you say it's calculated risk?
That basically means, for example, we purchased a lot of land in a certain country. And of course, there could be the risk that the government will expropriate this land. There could be a risk that, for example, the trees, the walnut trees in that example, get destroyed by bad weather or by some kind of bugs or something. But I know the people involved, the people working there, and I have a good, reliable team. And because I know that people are around who know how to do business, who know how to be entrepreneurial, and that basically is for me much, much easier to believe in such an investment than when it's just like a paper on the stock market, which is basically going up and down, how the speculators want it.
Well, I think that's 100% right, because I was involved in the stock market for, I don't know, more than 7 years. And I'm not saying that I'll never go back, but I got out last year, took my winnings and left, you know, because it really is a casino. And it's just so impossible to understand some of these big companies, especially in the tech space. So I was, you know, going back and forth with Netflix, shorting them and different things like that. And their business model, it just doesn't make sense. The logical things that are supposed to happen when you look at a balance sheet, when you look about how much money they're losing, and I can use Netflix as an example, but this relates to a lot of the tech industry right now in the United States. They're just so overbought that I did not feel safe there whatsoever, and it just seemed like the biggest bubble in the world. And I'm definitely pulling my money out and putting it into things that I can touch and smell and see and, you know, tangible assets.
Right, that's I think that the word I searched. It's a tangible asset. Basically, in everything what I'm doing at the moment, it's just, for example, a tree which grows, and it basically needs to grow for 5 years before there's the first harvest, and we actually get something from it, and then we have to invest a lot of money. But I know these trees are there, I can see them, and it's actually very nice to have something tangible to see it grow, and to feel a connection you don't have when you have like some certificate. Yeah.
Well, I have the same type of feeling when I invest in gold and I buy like physical bullion and things like that. It's in my hand. I can hold it, and you know, and I bring it to the vault or whatever and store it. And these are real things. You can touch it. So talk to me a little bit. You mentioned walnuts. So talk me through this investment that you're personally working on.
So we purchased 73 acres in Georgia, in the county of Georgia, in the Caucasus. And that's basically me and a good friend of me. He's basically a derivatives trader. from Germany, but he lives in Georgia for 3 years. And in our team as well are two Georgians who basically care for the operations. They come from a hazelnut family, hazelnut farming family. Now they do walnuts for us. And two Americans who basically help us with law things and also as investments. And basically the plan is at the moment we got planted 15,400 walnut trees and they need to grow for 5 years before they produce the first harvest. And now the nice thing is this special type of walnuts, so-called Chandler walnuts, are quite popular in the U.S. and California. And they grow them there a lot. But now in Georgia, we can basically produce them with 5 times less the cost because, like, the employees in Georgia, basically all costs are much, much less than in California. So basically, we produce the same quality, even a better quality, but have much, much less costs. And even the Californian farms are profitable. So that's basically a no risk investment for me.
Well, I'd be so, and maybe this is just me watching the news, but looking at the forest fires that happen in California pretty much every year, you know, I'd be mindful about starting agricultural businesses in California.
Yeah, definitely. And then, of course, there's some general developments. I mean, the world population is developing, it's growing. And there's probably in the future much more request for special kind of goods, especially goods with positive value for health. For example, nuts are very nutritional, very high in protein. More and more people eat nuts. You probably know it. You live in the Middle East, and that's one of the main markets for walnuts, and it's growing crazily in demand. And so we expect.
Well, and then it's the omega-3 fatty acids, which is an essential fatty acid, meaning basically that the body cannot produce it itself. So you have to get it from external sources. And whether that's, you know, fish, which is completely over, our oceans are overfished, or you have farm-raised, which are filled with antibiotics and are disgusting. But, you know, the alternatives are things like avocados or walnuts.
Mm-hmm. True. That's just basically our reasoning. And we think the price, of course, might go down, but in our eyes, it rather goes up in future, and the demand increases, especially in the Middle East. So we think it's a very solid investment, which also works very well in a recession. And in the moment, the reasoning a little bit is, I expect in the next 5 years there will be a new worldwide crisis, and when that's over already, basically our walnuts start to produce the first harvests and people will buy again walnuts because it's just, even if there's a big crisis, probably people will still continue to eat walnuts, yeah?
Well, yeah, it's not, I would never put walnuts really as a luxury good. Yes, it's probably more expensive than some other type of nuts out there, but I think in a lot of families, it's probably a staple. So talk to me, I understand the thought process for doing an alternative investment like this, but talk me through the beginning stages, how this came about, how the idea came about, and you know what the beginning of the project looked like for you guys.
Yeah, so basically, I got this friend from Germany. I know him for a long time. I know him very well. I did some services with him. Basically, that's how I do business. For me, it's very like big part. It's like a personal level. If you trust someone, if you did some crazy experience with someone, then he's a good business partner, especially if he's competent in what he does. So this guy lives in Georgia now for a while, and now and then he approached me with some investment opportunities. First, we thought actually about raising blueberries, but then he got a very good deal for walnuts. So basically, this project was already gone. Some Iranian guy wanted to buy it. But then the deal basically bust, and we got basically the chance to be the investors instead of the Iranian guy for much less money than originally we had to. Then it was basically a easy decision for us to just buy the stuff and start investing it.
So can you talk me through the numbers at all? How this started? Like, did you guys purchase the land? Are you renting the land? What were the numbers for these types of things when you got started?
basically, you have to consider in Georgia, foreigners can't own land. That makes it a bit more risky, of course. But we have this very trustful local Georgians who run our farm. So basically, we started a Georgian company with us as shareholders and them as directors. This company had purchased the 73, it's not acres, actually, it's hectares farm. And, then we started developing it. Yeah. So we actually then went together with neighbors of us, which are two Americans who already had the walnut basically project running. So we are now doing it together. And, they already have like half of it, like the 37 hectares running. And now we are doing the other 37 hectares and planting the new walnuts that's currently going on at the moment.
And so what year did you start this in, and like kind of how far are you through the grow cycle for these trees?
So basically this trees still need to grow for 5 years before they have their first harvest. Normally they need 8 years, but basically what we did is we purchased samplings from Turkey, already like 3-year-old trees, which basically can just be put in the ground, and then basically save yourself 3 years and you get profits much faster.
So you didn't have to start from seedlings or anything like that?
Right, seedlings, that's the word, yeah. So basically we have half of it already running, the trees are there, already from 2 years ago, and we have the new trees, like the other half, which is basically just be putting in the earth right now.
And so when you start setting this up, did you start looking for buyers in advance, or did you just kind of start planting the trees and think we'll find a buyer for this later?
No, basically the project is like this, that we can finance it completely from ourselves. So we are 6 people. We have the capital to basically do the farming for large parts of the farm ourselves. And that was the initial project. But because I have a big community of potential investors, and we decided to make it open for other people to invest, basically to be able to scale more quickly, to buy more land, and to just like apply better techniques, which lets us grow the profit even more. So we can finance it completely from ourselves, but of course investors make it easier for us.
Yeah, but when it comes harvest time in 5 years and you have the walnuts, do you already know who will be buying it? Did you already have a buyer in mind before you started growing?
Oh, yeah, of course. We are connected to like all the international buyers. I mean, I'm not involved in the operations of this project. I mean, what we're doing is the marketing and getting investors, because I know the people next to being invested myself. But the people there, they're traveling regularly to international conferences, to masses where they just are in contact with buyers. But I mean, there's not like fixed buyer, who just like says, in 5 years, I'll buy everything from you. So that's what we're not having.
This is so interesting, because I love to hear about these different types of entrepreneurial ventures and investments, because a lot of times when people think, and especially our age, you know, of people, they think entrepreneurship, really only what seems to come to mind is developing the next app or building the next Facebook or these types of startups. It's like, it doesn't need to be that way at all. Actually, you can take something as simple as planting a tree, either a fruit tree or a nut tree or something like this, harvesting and selling it. Like, these are businesses that have been around for thousands of years and will be around for as long as humans are on planet Earth, you know?
True. And basically, what we do in the beginning is just sell the nut as it is. But of course, when we have 2 or 3 harvests, we have the capital to maybe build some factories, to make, I don't know, walnut oil out of it, or to do other products, and then export it to markets like the US, where people pay higher prices than, for example, in local markets. So it's always an opportunity to even scale the project more, you can always expand it.
Well, and then I'm sure there's opportunities for going into the cosmetic industry, for selling the walnuts or the oil to, say, like a Korean country or a Korean company, something like that, where they could turn it into cosmetics. And there's so many applications for such a high-quality product.
Basically, like every business project works like this, right? So you start with the basic product, and that's how I did with my company as well. In the beginning, initially, I charged $30 for my consulting calls. Now I charge more than 20 times as much for that. So you just develop your business from step to step.
Yeah, and I think it's important. You know, one of my mentors is Grant Cardone, who's going to be a guest on this show. And he always talks about having businesses that are complementary to one another. So like we're saying, start with the walnut trees, now sell the nut. Okay, then from there, maybe build a factory and be able to take that and create an oil. And then from that, be able to sell that into a different place. And they're all almost separate businesses, but they're all part of the same business, if that makes sense. They're all additions to. Don't go from this into something, you know, like we were saying before, don't go from walnut farming into creating a food delivery app or something. They're not complementary. They're completely different set of skills.
Right. Totally true. Yeah.
So talk to me about, so you're traveling around the world, you're looking at these different types of investments, different type of business opportunities, things like this. What else is on the horizon for you? What other projects have you been working on or have caught your eye?
Yeah, so one project I'm involved in very much at the moment is a project which is still more or less private, non-public, and I can't basically tell you all the details about it, and that's the so-called Free Private City project. The Free Private City basically means we are involved in creating our own government. That's the dream of all libertarians, right? A government without a government. And it is working. It's basically, this project is running already over 9 years. I'm just getting involved like almost 2 years now as an investor, as well as like a marketer. Because, of course, if you try to start a new state, you need people to emigrate to, people to live in. And that's, of course, with my big community of people who want to relocate.
We will just take a quick break. Okay, before the episode started today, I mentioned to you a new video I put up talking about one of the best hacks out there for legally eliminating your tax bill. Actually, I have found several incredible hacks that can make a drastic difference to what you must pay the government. These hacks can push your savings even further for the right candidate. I get into them in the new course I've put together, but to get access to them, you must understand this first core principle. Without that, a lot of other things will just not fall into place. So, if you are an American citizen or green card holder, what I want you to do right now is pause this interview and go to expattaxhacks.com to watch a free video and discover how you can legally save more than $100,000 on taxes this year. Just go to expattaxhacks.com to claim your free video. I will most likely be pulling this down very soon and completely changing things up. So if you are an American and you don't want to give away all your hard-earned income to the government, then visit expattaxhacks.com. That's expattaxhacks.com.
They have big audience basically come and see what we're doing.
Okay, so what of the details are you allowed to share? Because this has definitely piqued my interest. You know, we've been talking about leaving the Middle East for a long time now. And living in a place with less government sounds fantastic to me.
So basically, I mean, I can tell pretty much about it, especially about the general concept. So the general concept is called Free Private City. That basically means it's a special zone, you can say. It's much more than like a free trade zone. It has, for example, 100% control over security and over the legal system. So it's not like, I have a free trade zone in, for example, Dubai, but I still have Dubai laws. We can completely design our own laws. The only thing what we don't have is basically full sovereignty. We can't basically give out passports. We can do our own like foreign policy, and it's still basically depending on the host nation. So basically this zone is in a nation. I can tell which nation this is, because basically this is only something for states which have big troubles. Our host nation is Honduras, and the free zone, the special zone, will be on the island of Roatan. Do you know Roatan?
Yeah, I've been there actually.
So Roatan is a nice, quite big island off the coast of Honduras, like 50 kilometers. Honduras is a country with a lot of problems, has the highest homicide rate in the Western world. Big in the media was this like caravan of people trying to migrate to the US. So basically the reasoning of the Honduras government is, if they create such like a, or at least allow such a zone in an island in Roatan itself, then like all these migrants wanting to go to the US, maybe just go to this island, and stay within Honduras. And then you have like all the spillover effects. Yeah. For example, Shenzhen, which went big because of Hong Kong. You probably see that in many other cities around the world as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Shenzhen has just blown up in the last few years. So this is interesting, though, about Honduras, because I think when I was there, it was probably 2002 or 2003. So it's been a very long time since I've had a chance to visit myself. But I remember it being a stunning, like the natural resources and the geography of the country was just absolutely stunning. But yes, safety-wise was one of those places where you wanted to be a bit mindful at night when you went out.
Yeah, definitely. So the like big promise of this project is 100% security. And that's what I should probably explain. What you get is basically a social contract when you want to move to the city. But it's completely voluntary. It's just like private law. You have a contract with the like operators of the city. Like this government is basically a for-profit government. It tries to make profit by providing governance services to its citizen. And if people, for example, have a contract with this operator for 100% security, because that's guaranteed, and then they get robbed in this zone, then they can sue this operator because he didn't provide them with security. So basically we just want to form a kind of zone where people can go in, which is very like bottom up. We don't have much regulations or something. We just want people to come and take their ideas and do everything they want. And there are only very, very limited regulations to keep like the stability of the zone. And of course, you have to keep some compromises with the host nation or with like big governments like the US. You cannot like do the libertarian utopia with like free drug trade and free weapon trade and so on. You have to have some restrictions in place in order to be realistic. And this problem is real and it's happening and it's probably going public very soon. Maybe even when this podcast is published, it might be even public. We just speak in probably 2, 3, or 4 weeks and they will go public with it. At the moment, it's still private because they just want to avoid that, like big media and then big governments get aware of it too quickly and might destroy what they basically built up in the last 9 years.
See, that's fascinating, and I love the idea of the government really competing for your dollars, competing for your business. Instead of using coercion to take your dollars away from you, they really look at the problem like, okay, how can we help people? What is it that people want? How can we, you know, do a better job and really earn these dollars, and I'm saying dollars, but any type of currency from the populace?
Yeah, I mean, the main idea is to inspire also other people, of course, to think about maybe doing such projects themselves. And when this first project is working, and my idea is, or I think it will work. And then, of course, you have the example and you can implement it in other countries. For example, I don't know if you heard about it, seasteading. They have this project in French Polynesia where they just basically want to build a floating city on islands which might soon sink in the ocean. And it's also very, very far. I met with the people in May there actually. But, they have the problem is French Polynesia. they still have like a lot of things to do with France, and France will always have a veto. What we have in Honduras is Honduras already changed the constitution. So 2 years ago, Honduras changed the constitution by popular vote. And this kind of special zones are completely legal now, are allowed. And basically nothing is stopping us to realize it. But it's, of course, much more difficult than many people imagine to form a state, to create a working legal system which is attractive enough to like draw the attention of companies in order to settle there. Yeah.
So talk to me a little bit about where the city is in the development right now. Are people living in this community? Is it a community that is being transformed, or are you breaking ground on a completely new place?
Mm-hmm. It's basically a new place. Roatan is an island which is quite touristy, where some people live. But still, basically half of the island is untouched. And we got a lot of basically ground on the island, mostly in the middle of the island, in the north and south. And that's mostly untouched, directly at the sea. And that's basically developed at the moment. So they're just zoning this grounds, and they start to build basic infrastructure. Because, like I said, this project is not public yet. And that, of course, means there's no one living there yet. But that's coming pretty soon, that the first people are basically allowed entry into this zone. And now the nice thing about Honduras is it's not like a little island which is far away in like Pacific. It is just 3 hours flight from many US cities. And there are actually direct flights from a lot of US cities. So you can fly actually from Atlanta, from Miami, from Dallas, from Houston, from Toronto, from Montreal. You can fly directly at least once or twice a week to Roatan. So it's quite easy to go there. And I think that makes it quite attractive for a lot of people.
Well, absolutely. Like every time we're talking about moving to a new city or something like that, one of the main things is the connectivity to the rest of the world. So because I live here in the Middle East, you know, I can fly with Etihad Airways, or I can drive down to Dubai, and I can get to most places in the world. You know, we've talked about living in different countries and things like that. And it's like, well, because I go to so many conferences and I speak overseas and things, I need to be able to commute to different countries to be able to attend these events. If I was, you know, out in the middle of the South Pacific or something like that, and it took me 2 days to get to a proper city in the States or in Europe, you know, I don't know if that would really fit in with our lifestyle. But it's interesting to hear that these ones, they actually have an international airport right on the island of Roatan.
Yeah, that's of course also important for people who maybe don't want to connect over like mainland Honduras, where the situation is much unsafer. Also, what is nice to say about this island, Roatan, is actually it's English speaking. It's not Spanish speaking. Of course, Spanish is a good language and quite easy to learn as well. But Roatan was always basically in the hand of the Brits. And only like in recent years, basically in the decolonization after the Second World War, it got Spanish or like Honduran. And that basically also means that the people on the islands are very independent minded. So it's very important that the population living there already has a positive attitude against the project, because they always were quite pro-secession, and they basically now, their dreams get true with this kind of project. And maybe one thing to add is this constitution, which was changed, basically allows any community, any landowner, to voluntarily associate with our free zone. So basically they can say, I want to be part of these rules, of these regulations, of this free private city. And my land is basically now part of that. And the idea is we start with a little bit land in Roatan, but then after some years, maybe we have all the island and then some neighbor islands and then some parts of the mainland. And maybe in the end we reform to the complete country or even region. Yeah.
That's incredible. Like, I'm just letting that sink in for a minute. Like, that's incredible. So the opportunity to grow the idea and the concept of libertarianism in a practical sense, because so often, you know, we talk philosophical ideas about this type of governance, but it's very difficult to actually have it in real life, because there's so many statists out there who believe in this Keynesian type of economics, and that's how our governments are run. But now to see that, okay, let's try this. Let's put it into a real-life practical example. And if it works, we actually have the opportunity to see it grow.
Yes. And it's very important to say that there's nothing involved with politics. There won't be a democracy. It's a for-profit company with a board of directors, and they basically decide what is good for the zone. But, of course, mostly the people living there and decide what's good for the zone, because when it's bad for them, if they have bad conditions, they will just leave. So, of course, this free private city operator tries to create the best framework in order to be attractive as possible for many people. And now what many people, especially from the left, think is state needs so much money to operate like basic government services, but that's just not true. Probably we just need to charge around $2,000 a year. We can provide very much of the basic infrastructure and security and legal system we are used to in high developed Western states, where you pay 20 times the price. Yeah? So it's just much more efficient.
Yeah, it sounds so. Absolutely. My mind is already spinning about all the opportunities, because I have heard of the seasteading. I always have trouble with this one. The seasteading and the Liberland, but this is a completely new project that I've never heard of. So I'm already thinking about all the implications and the differences and the changes and the opportunities.
Yeah, that's good that you haven't heard of. And then it's basically, that was our strategy, or the strategy of the project, that no one use of it too quickly. Basically, Liberland, for example, in my eyes, is basically just a fake or a big scam act even. It never really materialized, yeah. And this project is really happening. It has a very professional team. A lot of basically entrepreneurs who are now retired, who are in their 50s, and are libertarians and just want to make something happen, to change something, are involved. So that's basically why I got involved there.
And so are you going to be able to take some of the ideas and the concepts that you've learned through the agricultural projects doing in Georgia with the walnut farms? Are you going to take some of those concepts and ideas that you've learned and be able to bring them over to Honduras?
Yeah, of course. It's not our plan to do like agriculture, at least not my plan to do agriculture there. It's more, for example, like industry-wise, it should be a place for fintech companies, for banking, for crypto, for like biotechnology, for many like highly regulated areas in Western states, which can basically go there and be under very little regulation and innovate there. So for me, the main thing is in the zone is to create like at the moment a center for my community, or for like the global community of like little entrepreneurs and freelancers and so on. I just want to bring them together in one place, maybe build a co-working space there, just connect people and teach them the spirit of freedom by applying entrepreneurship and technology.
Interesting. So then if you are going to do a lot of the technology side, are you guys going to be able to have high-speed wireless internet and things like this that are so important for so many digital nomads, especially a lot of my listeners are digital nomads?
Yeah, that will be, of course, coming. At the moment, the internet condition in Roatán is not perfect, but it's, at least for me, more than sufficient. We could have a call there, like with good internet connection, that won't be an issue. But they're actually working on like a cable from, I think, Miami coming. Miami isn't that far, actually. And I think that will be done in the latest in 1.5 years. And then they have really high-speed internet on the island as well. So, of course, there are some disadvantages because of the location, because Honduras is still a developing country. In order to be attractive, you just need to provide certain things in the 21st century.
Yeah. You just mentioned something very interesting. So, disadvantages. Talk to me the other side of the other piece of the puzzle. What are the negatives? What are the bad things, the challenges that you're going to have to overcome with developing these types of projects?
Yeah, of course, you have to always do some compromises. First have like the host nation. So for example, Honduras must be allowed, and that a lot of Hondurans actually go there and can work there and things like that. You have to be compliant like with international things. For example, what you can't do is like a zero tax oasis with no taxes at all. That won't work. And they will get incredible international pressure because of that. So probably it will be a territorial tax system. You don't pay taxes on your foreign income, but you will have at least some local tax, but only one tax, and that will be very easy to handle. But that's like one of the big issues. You have to get compromises in order to get it off the ground, in order to get it happening.
Okay, so talk to me about the investment opportunities, because we've started off the interview speaking about the walnut farms in Georgia, and now it seems like we've kind of jumped completely left and we've talked about alternative cities. But really, we're just talking about alternative investments, because I believe there is an opportunity for people to get involved in projects like this. And it's important to see the type of mindset in alternative investments.
Yeah, I think, this alternative city, this free private city, is also an investment opportunity. And I will come to that briefly. But for example, consider what we want to do is basically to create the next Singapore, the next Hong Kong. But it is a private for-profit company, and of course you can be a shareholder of that company. Like with my investment, it's not that high, but I probably get like 1.0% of this operating company. Now imagine in 10 years, in 20 years, this free private city has the success of like cities Dubai or Singapore or Hong Kong, which are valued in multiple billions. Have 1.0% of a city which is worth multiple billions. You are a multi-millionaire. So, of course, this is also an alternative investment. And basically, that's what's possible at the moment. People can basically be shareholders of this operating company, which will provide governance services and develop all this project. At the moment, the threshold is still quite high. You need to invest like $250,000 to be part of it. But after the project gets public, which will be very soon, probably 1 or 2 months maximum, probably investors will start from $25,000 to be part of basically this project. So that basically means you're a shareholder, you get dividend distributions if the for-profit company makes profit. And that's, of course, the goal. And the main thing is, of course, the value. If the project is taking off, if it's working, if the city grows and really might become its own government in itself someday, then you have very, very high profit margins.
It's so funny to think about a libertarian investing in government, but it's such a different way to look at it. But it's really fascinating.
Yes, that's not government, it's just governance. And of course, I always say that when I argue with people, it's not about like no regulation or no government. It's always about who governs and who regulates.
Yeah, and how it's done and what the rules and the laws are. You know, is it done through force? Is it done through threatening people? Or is it done through commerce and through true capitalism?
Okay, I think it's important to stress, like the city is holding up libertarian values. It's all like voluntary, and there's no force and obligation or violence involved. If someone doesn't like us, he just goes, and he can be happy somewhere else. And of course, we are pretty open to basically anyone who keeps the contract of the city. And of course, if he, for example, breaks the contract, steals from someone, damages property of someone, he will just get kicked out. We will basically just send him back to his home country or wherever, and he can't be part of the city anymore. And that's not how many...
Well, that's the same type of thing here in the UAE. We have, you know, if you break the rules and break the laws, a lot of times it won't be about incarceration. You'll just get blackballed. Your visa will be... revoked, and you know, you have to go home, and you know, for a lot of people, that's terrible. Like, I can't imagine getting kicked out of a country. I think that would just be an awful, horrible experience.
Yeah, but basically, you know it before, right? You sign a contract, and it says that's your rights, that's your obligations, and that's pretty minimal. And
yeah, I just mean that, like, for something that to happen, it makes me want to abide by the rules and abide by the laws, because I know what they are coming in. I made a voluntary choice by coming here, by living here. You know, I'm not going to get surprised by the rules and what you can say and do here. If you don't like it, then feel free to go somewhere else.
I think it's also an important point you just stressed, and it's also something I really want to say about this project. Like, for people like me or you or other, like, international investors, privateers, and so on, they can still, at least if they're not American, design their lifestyle pretty much tax-free and very free from everything by just applying factory and other strategies. But people who basically work on the ground through some physical activity, like the baker or the mechanic or someone, they are always basically taxed very highly. And because they can't move, they're not so mobile. And like this kind of free zone, with like their own law, a very good local tax system and so on, are much more attractive also like for smaller local entrepreneurs. So that's basically what we want to attract. People who actually move there, who build up a local business. Of course, nomads are also welcome, but nomads already have the choice to basically live tax-free in high-taxed cities around the world. You can still live in Berlin or in Stockholm or in New York and still don't pay any taxes and so on if you structure it properly.
So I understand a lot about the investment opportunities, talking about the security and things like this and the contracts that you'll put in place for this. But there must be quite a bit of opportunity for the housing, for the infrastructure that it will be put in, like we were just talking about for the baker candlestick maker type of, you know, brick and mortar businesses. How will that look? Will people be able to own the land? How will their businesses be built there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so basically people can, of course, own land, can buy land. And basically the landowner at the moment is the operator, the free private city, and who basically then either leases out the land or sells it with a legal title for the future landowners. And of course, now in the beginning, the land will still be quite cheap because no one knows how the project will turn out. But of course, I mean, it's like in every city, and if it has success, then the land prices will go up dramatically.
So do you see this as a real asset or that you're investing in with the calculated risk like we talked about before? Or do you see this as quite a speculative play?
I mean, it's speculative insofar that it's not clear, or there are a lot of like variables and making not clear what will happen. For example, maybe some states don't really like such a free competitor, and they just wage a war, and then the free private city gets destroyed or things like that. And there are a lot of things which might happen or might not happen, and that make it quite hard to evaluate. But like from what I see, like the project is already going on for 9 years. It's prepared very meticulously, and there are very, very good people in the team. I think like without external factors, it will be a very huge success.
Fascinating. I definitely want to read more. I want to learn more myself. If my listeners want to get involved, if they want to learn more about what you do, Christoph, where can we send them?
Yeah, you can send them to my different blogs. So for example, in the English speaking, I have my blog called tax-free.today, which is basically covering all the tax-free aspects, also investments. And then I have a personal blog, which is called christoph.today, christoph.today, which tells people about my travel adventures, all the 140 countries I've been to already, also some more parts of my life, different projects. You can also read a little bit about the free private city thing, also about the walnut farm, if you're interested in the details, how to do investment.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much for your time, Christoph. These are really fascinating ideas and concepts that we've been talking about today, and I really appreciate your time.
Yeah, thanks for the invitation. It was nice to talk with you about this new project. And yeah, you were actually one of the first who gets to know at least some little details about it, and I hope you're quite excited.
I am quite excited. And for my listeners, I knew nothing about the project coming in, so I'm discovering everything absolutely fresh at the exact same time as you guys are. So I'm really excited to learn more and read more and see how this all turns out. Well, Christoph, I'll talk to you soon. Thank you again for your time. We'll talk soon, okay?
I hope you enjoyed today's interview, and I want to give you one final reminder. If you are an American citizen or green card holder, you can go to expattaxhacks.com to discover how to save more than $100,000 in taxes this year. This is super powerful stuff, and actually, it's just the start. I can actually help take you even further. And there are huge opportunities available to expats or to those who have always dreamed of being expats. To find out what I'm talking about, go to expattaxhacks.com. Remember, it is your right to do everything you can to legally reduce your tax bill. There are ways to do it, and I am here to help you. Just go to expattaxhacks.com.
This episode may be over, but your journey to greatness continues by visiting our webpage and signing up for our newsletter. For convenient access to new episodes, show notes, and other crucial resources, visit expatmoneyshow.com. We look forward to you joining us on the next episode of the Expat Money Show. Safe travels!